Chris, who's been a hell of a sponsor to me past few years, really helped me out a lot, and a good friend. He's going to speak tonight, and he's just going to give you his take on this whole deal. And you know, for those of you that don't know me, my name is Jim, and I'm an alcoholic and an addict, and we're going to cover a couple other things here. But before we begin, I'd like to take a moment and let God quiet our minds from the thoughts of the day. Bob, would you say the set-aside prayer?
God, we invite you into this room. Guide and direct each of us as we seek your truth. Father, please set aside within each of us that which would block us off from the truth. Lay aside our prejudices about what we think we know about this process, this meeting, and our spiritual condition. Remove our fears, Lord, that we may hear your truth through the members of this group. Give us the strength and courage to share your truth with each other in a real spirit of love and compassion for our fellow man. Amen.
Amen. Thanks a lot, Bob. Like I said, my name is Jim. I'm an alcoholic and an addict. And I'd like to welcome everybody here. It is the group's fourth anniversary, and it's just an honor to have Chris down here. He's got a clear message, and he's a lot of fun. Chris and I have shared some really good times up at the Wilson House, yucking it up in the room adjacent to where Bill Wilson was born, and drawing the crowd away from the Friday night. Was it Saturday night? Friday night meeting that was going on in the other room. Yeah, and we just have a real good time. And you know, where it says in the big book, we are not a glum lot. Chris has certainly helped me along with that. And he's just going to give you his take on things tonight. I want to thank you for coming down.
Thanks, Jim.
Thanks, bro.
My name's Chris. I am an alcoholic. It's great to be down here. I'm honored to be asked to share the fourth anniversary of this group. This group has done a lot. There's been a lot of people who've come through these rooms, and I'm sure been benefited greatly from what they've found here. AA is somewhere around 7 years old. You know, we're always struggling to figure out what the anniversary date is, the beginning of it. I'll tell a little bit of the story here for anybody who's interested in it. Ray, myself, T, Carl, P, a number of people. We're batting around the idea for quite a while about using the book Alcoholics Anonymous in a way that's non-exclusionary. In other words, there was difficulty in a number of the 12-step fellowships with one thing or another, to do with membership or to do with conference-approved literature or to do, you know. It was kind of a struggle for the people who had a big book step-based spiritual awakening to be able to really share that openly in a number of groups. And through the late 90s into maybe 2001 or something, a number of people were struggling to do that up in our area. I think everybody in here has probably been to other fellowships and understands primary purpose and understands traditions and understands that there are certain things that are approved and certain things that are not approved. And the people that were especially had addiction, drug addiction in their stories, were especially struggling to be able to carry the message to other addicts using the big book. Now, As a sponsor, you can only really share what you have. And if it's been your experience that you've had a spiritual awakening based on the instructions in the book Alcoholics Anonymous, and that's been the revolutionary change, and that's brought you recovery, it's kind of difficult to use another book or another process and try to carry that message to someone because it's really not been your experience. So for a long time there was stuff happening underground. There was there would be people going to some of the meetings and saying, "Look, come on over to my house and we're going to go through the big book." And, you know, kind of keep it quiet, you know, because people have a hard time with it. Or else there were alcoholics, that were struggling with the people that were showing up in their meetings who were more addict than alcoholic, that didn't really have a real drinking history. And, you know, there was a lot of problems, but what became apparent is that these people who've had the spiritual awakening as a result of the 12 steps now needed to carry the message of recovery to other people. And it got to a point where Ray and some other people had started a meeting. And I'm gonna try not to name these meetings because I don't want to be critical of any of our friends. But they started a meeting that was basically in the beginning for people with drug addiction. And what happened was, for a long time, they kept everything underground. You know, the big book was down here, and the basic text of that fellowship was up here. And finally, one day, Ray and some of the other guys said, "We can't do this anymore. This is not really working for us. It's not working for them. It's not our experience. The recovery process that we've experienced is in the big book." So what Ray did was he did this. He put the big book up on the table. It was a matter of weeks until people from the General Service Office were showing up at that meeting, having an absolute fit. You know, and I'm going to say maybe as well they should. I'm not going to cast judgment on any fellowship's right to have a primary purpose or to decide on approved literature. That's completely their right. But what happened was they threatened to take him out of the book. They threatened to, tell the church that, you know, they're not affiliated with their they were really being hardcore about it. So, you know, there were some words, as you can imagine, with Ray. And then we talked. And Ray came over to my house and we sat with this. And as with any big decision like that, you really kind of need to go to God with these things. God, show me some direction. And we had talked a little bit about a fellowship, and you know what? Now's the time. Let's start Alcoholics Narcotics Anonymous. That was the original name of the fellowship until we were threatened to be sued again. It didn't go over too well. There was one fellowship in particular that didn't like those two words being put together. And I'll say, as well they should. Fellowship has a right to their primary purpose and a right to the integrity of the name of their fellowship. So, it was my bright idea, because it had already spread around as A&A, it was my bright idea to say, instead of Alcoholics Narcotics Anonymous, let's call it a National Association of Recovered Alcoholics and Addicts. That way, A&A, which is the buzzword of this whole thing, can stay there, but the meaning has changed. So this is somewhere around 2001, I'm guessing. Was it 2002 when it started? Okay, 2002. Then it's about 6 years old. Mm-hmm. All right. Again, I'm numerically dyslexic. I could never figure this out. Anyway, what happened was there was a huge interest. There was a ton of people who were looking for something different in a fellowship. And then there were people who were looking for something stronger with a program. I want to differentiate the two terms. Has anybody ever heard somebody come into a meeting and say, "When I came into the program," you hear that all the time, right? Well, you don't come into a program. You take the steps of a program, but you don't come into a program. You come into a fellowship. So whenever I hear somebody go, "Yeah, when I came into the program," I know they know absolutely nothing about recovery, because they're right from the get-go, they've got the complete wrong terminology for what they're talking about. Anyway, there were more people that were interested in a new fellowship, really, than there were people that were interested in a new program. So there was an immediate rush of people to ANA. And what they found was, some of them found, much to their consternation, that there was more than one requirement for membership. Now, you have to look at ANA with clear eyes, with an open mind, with a beginner's mind. What I mean by that is, so many of us, myself included, come into ANA with a mindset from another fellowship. You know, well, that's not how we do it over there. Or, well, you know, you guys got the traditions wrong over there. You need to know something. We don't have traditions in ANA. You know what I mean? We have some trustees, and we have some guiding members who've been around a long time, kind of the way AA did until 1950, when it was turned over to itself at the General Conference. But for the first 15 years of AA, it was basically run by Bill and Dr. Bob. ANA is still basically being run by a number of people who get together, who are recovered alcoholics or addicts, and kind of are trying to make decisions for the integrity of ANA and quite possibly the growth of ANA. But the integrity is really coming first. Now, a lot of the people who were instrumental in the formation of these groups got a hardcore, literature-based, big book recovery experience. So when the literature was being drawn up, it was basically read tonight, the people who had to do with that, the writing of that literature, were people who had awakened spirits, who had recovered from alcoholism and drug addiction, who had had the spiritual awakening, had that personality change at depth that allowed them to recover. And it became very, very vital to all of us that were involved in this process from the beginning to ensure the integrity of the recovery process. Now, what do I mean by that? The history of fellowships, and you can look at any of them, the history of fellowships are, they change over the course of time. Whatever message was there at the very beginning ends up getting diluted through experience of members, through conventions, through service groups, you know, inner groups, you know, whatever, and outside influences and some bad decisions inside. All fellowships have that in common. But over the course of time, they get weaker as far as the structure of their program is concerned, and they get stronger as far as their fellowship is concerned, because they grow. Now, one of the things that was decided early on was, we don't need another fellowship where it's okay for you to come in, languish in the back of the room, not be held accountable to working a recovery process, and sit there and share about how bad your day is week after week after week. We don't need another fellowship where that's okay. What we wanted was a fellowship that was top-heavy on the recovery process. And that's really what you have here in ANA. ANA is not for everybody. There's people that come into these rooms and sit down and go and never come back to another ANA meeting. They see it as an overreaction to their addiction illness or their alcoholism. And that's fine, because there's different levels of alcoholism, there's different levels of drug addiction. In this book, Alcoholics Anonymous, and if you want to use this inclusively, where it says alcoholic, change it to addict. Where it says alcohol, change it to the drug of no choice that you had. But it says in here, we want to smash home the idea, the difference between the heavy drinker and the alcoholic. That needs to be smashed home. They use chapter 2 and 3 specifically to give us the information and a descriptive analysis of the difference between a heavy drinker and an alcoholic. And they do that prior to us making a third step decision. And there's a reason for that. In the early days, when this book was written, all there were hopeless people. It's the only people that were open to a message like this. Much like a lot of the hopeless people are open to an A&A message today, and the people who are, you know, high bottoms or, you know, not far down the scale, however you want to call them, they're not open to this message. They run for the hills. But basically, what happened in the early days is it was only the hopeless people who were drawn to this message. Dr. Silkworth was the guy who wrote the doctor's opinion in here. His success rate with the hopeless alcoholic was nothing. I mean, his success rate with all the people being treated for alcohol addiction was 2%. 2% of the people that spent the 10 grand to go to his hospital stayed sober. And most of those, if not all of them, were heavy drinkers. Now, it's important to understand the difference between a real alcoholic and a heavy drinker, and a real drug addict and a heavy drug user. And it's pretty simple. And a lot of people get this wrong. My understanding is from this book. Now, if you were to go to treatment, if you were to go to outpatient, if you were to go to a counselor, if you were to go to the drug courts, or you were to go anywhere, most of them will stamp you with an A right on your forehead. They'll ask you, well, has drinking caused you a lot of problems in your life? You know, has drug use like caused you to spend a lot of money? And you'll say, yes, yes. And they'll keep asking these questions that basically lead into positive affirmation. In other words, they've already got the questions out there, you know. Do you drink more than once a week? You know, and all of these questions have nothing to do with whether you're a real alcoholic or a heavy drinker, whether you're a real addict or a heavy drug user. This book makes it very, very clear the distinction between the heavy drinker and the alcoholic is in their lack of control. If you honestly want to, have you found that you have not been able to give up drinking or drugs entirely? I mean, if you made a decision, if you got busted one more time, or you had one more DWI, or your wife threw you out one more time, or whatever, and you said to yourself, I am never drinking again, and you really mean it, do you find that some way or somehow you change your mind and alcohol or drugs go back in your body? If you honestly want to, do you find you can't quit drinking or drugging on your own unaided will? Now, I have real difficulty sponsoring somebody who comes in and the first time they try to quit, they quit. I don't know if they're an alcoholic. I don't know if they're an addict. It's the first time they're trying to quit. They could be doing it on their own willpower. You know what this book tells you to do? Go back out and try not drinking for a year. Don't go to any of these fellowships. Don't get counseling. Don't read self-help books. Don't do Primal Scream therapy. Don't watch Oprah. Just don't drink for a year. All right? That's what you're supposed to do if you don't know whether you have the obsession of the mind. So if it's the first time you ever quit, how do you know? If you can't go back into your experience and see where you've made firm decisions, real decisions, to stay away from drugs and alcohol and found you can't, you're not going to be able to know if you're an alcoholic or not. You can qualify as a heavy drinker, you can qualify as a heavy drug user, but if you've just decided to quit and quit, that's not what we are. We're the people who no amount of willpower is successful in keeping away the first drink or the first drug. No matter what kind of convictions we have, no matter what the consequences are, you know, you're going to have a heart attack if you drink again, you know, I'm firing you, I'm throwing you out of the house, you're going back to jail. None of that is sufficient defense against the first drink or the first drug because of the strange mental blank spots that occur prior to us putting booze or drugs back into our body. How they describe it in this book is subtle forms of insanity. Now, the people who have those subtle forms of insanity and make decisions to quit drinking and end up drunk, you go to some of the 12-step fellowships and you drink, or you get out of rehab and you drink on the way home, and you really, really wanted to stay separated, but you found you just couldn't, those are the people that this book was written for. Those are the people that ANA was developed for. The hopeless case. Hopeless or powerless are synonymous. If you admit that you're powerless over drugs and or alcohol, you're admitting to that, to the obsession of the mind. You're admitting to, you don't have any control over when you put it back in your body. You're not in charge. Suddenly, the thought crosses your mind that you can buy a bag of dope because you had a sandwich. Or you can do, you know, you can get 12 rocks of crack and smoke it up because, you know, you don't have any money. Or you can put the vodka in the milk because you just had a submarine. Or whatever stupid reason that you have. They call it suddenly in this book, and it's being struck drunk or being struck high. That's what happens to the people who can admit to powerlessness. Go back through your own experience. See where your own experience shows that that's the case with you. If it's not the case with you, you know, you're welcome here. You're welcome here. But you don't need what we have. You don't need what we have. You can benefit from what we have, but you don't really need it. Because you can just not drink, not drug. You can just moderate or stop altogether. Whatever you want, you know. Again, if you're not sure, what you're supposed to do is you're supposed to quit for a year, and if for any reason drugs or alcohol go back in your body, you failed. You don't change your mind and say, this test sucks, you know, or why do I have to go a year? I want 30 days, you know, that's enough. If you fail, if drugs and alcohol go back in your body in that 1 year period of time, you fail, and you got to come back and you got to admit to powerlessness because it wasn't you changing your mind. Let me ask you this question. Is it possible that it's an insane thought to drink and use for you? Isn't it insane to drink and use? Knowing what you know about what drugs or booze do to you. Knowing where you end up, knowing what happens, knowing the quality of your life just goes down into the toilet, knowing all the physical, the mental, the spiritual consequences of using, don't you see that that's an insane decision? You can't make that decision from a place of sanity. You don't say, well, you know, I haven't had a drink in 18 years, you know, the last time I drank, I threatened my family with a handgun, and I ended up detoxing and seeing demons, and spent the first 6 months of my sobriety wanting to kill myself, and I struggled my way to some form of spiritual comfort, you know, struggling every night in the fellowships, recovery fellowships for friggin' 17 or 18 years. You know, I think I'll go over to the bar and have a double. You want to join me, Jim?
Sure.
Do you understand? You can't make that decision from a sane state of mind. So, if you've experienced those strange mental blank spots that precede the first drink of the first drug, you're screwed. You're hosed. You don't know when that's going to come back. The ego wants you to think you're in charge. Well, if I go to a couple meetings this week, I won't drink. Well, how do you know? How do you know? You're not in charge. It's a mental obsession. It's a phenomenon. It can strike at will. How do you know? The only thing that these guys found was by going through the 12-step program of recovery and staying absolutely diligent, staying meticulously diligent with your spiritual life, places you in a climate where God can remove that obsession to drink. God removes that obsession. You don't do it through your works, and you don't do it because you want to, and you don't do it through education. Now, this isn't a popular message. This isn't the message that you're going to get from Happy Hills. This isn't the message you're going to get from your counselor. Your counselor's going to have you looking at your issues and your triggers. Let's look at your issues and let's look at your triggers.
Yeah, lots of triggers.
Your issues and your triggers have nothing to do with it. The powerlessness of addiction is not causal. Do you understand what I mean by that? It's not causal. It doesn't happen because you lose a job. It doesn't happen because she leaves you or he leaves you. Did you ever drink or use when he left you? Did you ever drink or use when he freaking stayed? Did you drink and use when it was raining? Did you drink and use on a sunny day? Did you drink or use when you lost a job? Did you drink or use when you had the thing? It's not causal. Okay? It's an obsession of the mind. You can't say that alcoholism and drug addiction is a disease and then start educating somebody about your triggers or your issues. that's not what's going to help you. Okay? If you go into a rehab, they're gonna start listing all the consequences of your drinking and your drug use. Oh my God, look at all these consequences. You're in real trouble. Look at all the problems this is causing. That's knowing all that is not going to protect you from the next drink or drug. It's not causal. It's more of a manifestation of insanity. So they mean in the second step, restore us to sanity. It doesn't mean we're psychopaths, as some of us are. It doesn't mean it doesn't mean that we're manic depressives as a lot. It means that we get struck with strange mental phenomenon that allows us to put drugs and alcohol back in our body. That's really bad news. Okay? And this is also not a popular message that you're going to hear at a rehab, because if they were to be honest with you when they sat you down, they have to say, yeah, we're going to educate you in, THIQ, and we're going to show you how to do your triggers, and there'll be a little relapse prevention class, which will be absolutely non-effective for you. And we're going to put you in group, and we're going to sit you around in a big circle, and you can just do group, and you can talk about your day, and we'll have you doing that, and then we'll have you do a first step prep and a life story, and you'll write all the stuff that you already know about yourself. And at the end, after 28 days, we're going to hand you a bill, and we're going to tell you that no human power can relieve you of your alcoholism or drug addiction. You're totally hosed. You need to find God, and you need to find Him now. Here's your bill for $13,000. Thank you. All right? There's not a rehab in the world that's going to give you that message, because it's bad for business. Okay? Now, the thing is rehabs and counseling and all this stuff, all these outreach programs, they're very helpful. You know who they're helpful for? The heavy drinker and the heavy drug user. They're getting sober and clean all over the place through these things. They're great programs. They're good to have around. If, however, you have experienced the powerlessness of alcoholism or drug addiction, you're a host. Okay? You really only have one direction, and that's spiritual living. That's go through the steps, clear away all the crap that's in between you and a vital experience with God, and stay close to God. That's your only hope. That's your only hope. You got to understand, Dr. Silkworth, in this book, this is 1938 or 39, he's the expert in the Northeast. He runs the most prestigious hospital in New York City for drug and alcohol addiction. He's the main cat in this hospital. He's the clinical director. And when he saw these guys who were sitting around working the steps and being of service to each other and carrying the message to each other, get sober, it woke him up, because these were the hopeless people. These were the people that he would look you in the eye and tell you, if you don't get locked up, if you don't lock your husband up, put him in an asylum, he's going to drink himself to death. Sorry, there's nothing I can do. This is the best that they have, okay? I really wish that they would still carry that kind of message for the hopeless alcoholic, but it's not in their agenda to separate the hopeless from the non-hopeless. It's not in their agenda to say, oh, you're just a heavy drinker, you're not an alcoholic. That's not something they're interested in doing, qualifying you in these places. They're more interested in treating you, because that's what they do. And they treat you the same. They treat you, if you're a real alcoholic, just like him if he's a heavy drinker. You get the same treatment process. You ride in the same van to the same meeting. Okay? And that's what happens. So in the early days, they found that this would work for the hopeless alcoholic. Let's pay attention to this, okay? Because we may be in real trouble. A lot of times we're in more trouble than we think we are. Alcoholism and addiction doesn't allow us the dignity of an accurate self-appraisal. All these processes look like an overreaction. I see it all the time. Somebody straight out of the gates of hell shows up in a meeting and says, would you help me? And I'll say, sure, come on over to my house. I want you to pick up a big book. I want you to underline some things. I want you to show up on Thursday. Oh, man, Thursday's not a good day. I've got racquetball. What is the matter with you? They can't comprehend the amount of trouble they're in. You know what they did back in the first 15 years? If you came in with a job, If you were going to work with them, you had to go on a leave of absence. Do you want to know why you had to go on a leave of absence? They wanted nothing in the way of you and this step work. They didn't want you to say, I've got to work tonight, or I've got the PTA meeting. They weren't interested in anything being in the way of you working through these steps. Take a leave of absence or don't let the door hit you in the ass, is what they would tell you. This is prior to the tradition of the only requirement for membership is to be a knucklehead. So they were serious about this stuff, and there was a reason. These were drop down Bowery bum, get to pull them out of Greystone Asylum alcoholics. You know the asylums back in the day. This is you know, there's been some reform, some asylum reform, and we can all be thankful for that. But do you know if you had two family members back in the day who would sign something and you got two doctors to sign it, you could commit somebody for the rest of their lives? Goodbye, you know?
I'm up for that.
I mean, if my ex-wife was able to do that, I'd still be chirping from behind bars. So they were pulling those guys out. They would go to Greystone every like Tuesday night and pull guys out of there, and they were taking people that were absolutely hopeless. Everybody had said that they're going to die drunk, or we got to keep them locked up, and they were pulling them out, and they were offering them a way of life that was just absolutely revolutionary. They're able to go back out into society, do whatever they needed to do, as long as they followed a few simple rules. Now, how do we do it in A&A? Boy, they do it fast in A&A, don't they?
Oh, yeah.
Those crazy, that Jimmy guy, that guy from that meeting over in that area at that church. Were you ever called that?
Worse.
Okay. All right. Now, I just want to show that what's happening here is not some newfangled thing, okay? What's happening in the other fellowships out there now is the newfangled stuff. That's the fad stuff that's happening out there now. Let me tell you how they did it in the early days. I'm going to read a little bit from a story from the second edition. This is somebody who was sponsored by Dr. Bob. The story is he sold himself short. This is a fourth edition, and it's around page 263. I stayed in Akron. That's where Dr. Bob was. Two or three weeks on my initial trip to try to absorb as much of the program and philosophy as possible. I spent a great deal of time with Dr. Bob whenever he had the time to spare in the homes of two or three other people. He was kind of fellowshipping with them, trying to see how the family lived the program. Because they'd show you, carry the message and use words if you have to, was one of Dr. Bob's saying. Every evening we would meet at the home of one of the members and have coffee and donuts and spend a social evening. The day before I was due to go back to Chicago, it was Dr. Bob's afternoon off. He had me to his office and we spent 3 or 4 hours formally going through the six-step program as it was at that time. The six steps were complete deflation. That's our first step. Admission of powerlessness. I can't manage my own life and I am going to die drunk. I am going to die high. That's your full concession. I am. Not I can't drink or I can't use no matter what, even if my ass falls off. That's not the first step. The first step is I can do nothing to prevent it. I can't prevent the next drink or the next drug going into my body. That's the first step. That's what the concession is. Dependence and guidance from a higher power. This is moving toward steps 2 and 3, where there is a solution. You don't have the power, but you can attach to the power. In other words, the power that can relieve you of your obsession to drink and help you repair some of the things in your life, help with the character defects and everything, is the power of God. Your higher power, the power of the spirit of the universe, however you want to look at it, that's completely up to you. But dependence and guidance from a higher power. So this is basically 2, 3, and 11. Moral inventory, that's step 4. And Dr. Bob would help you with this. He didn't think you could write an inventory. Usually you were 2 minutes away from a drink when he had you. So he'd help you. He'd help you write. You know how they help you write the second, the third and fourth column here? That's what Dr. Bob would do. He would sit down and he would help you with the third and the fourth column. Because you just, you know, you got your head up your butt. You know, you're not seeing things clearly. It's going to help for someone who has an awakened spirit to be able to look at you and really see what's going on. Because you don't know how much trouble you're in. Confession, that's the fifth step. Restitution, that's step 8 and 9. Continued work with other alcoholics. That's the six-step program, but it really is our 12-step program. Okay, 3 or 4 hours. Dr. Bob led me through all of these steps at the moral inventory. He brought up several of my bad personality or character defects, such as selfishness, conceit, jealousy, carelessness, intolerance, ill temper, sarcasm, and resentments. We went over these at great length, and then finally he asked me if I wanted these defects of character removed. When I said yes, we both knelt at his desk and prayed, each of us asking to have these defects taken away. This picture is still vivid. If I live to be 100, it will always stand out in my mind. It was very impressive, and I wish every AA could have had the benefit of this type of sponsorship today. Okay? This is kind of the type of sponsorship we're trying to offer in A&A. Are we top-heavy as far as the recovery program is concerned? Yeah, that's because we're not on a membership drive. We're not trying to be the biggest fellowship in the world. We're really trying to have integrity with the process of the 12 steps. And again, one of two things will happen if you come into A&A. You'll immediately recognize that you're going to be expected to do some step work. Okay? And you may say, well, I did the steps with Harvey Gerbil Feather from the other fellowship. And you know what they're going to say? That don't count. Okay? That don't count. Because we don't know Harvey Gerbil Feather. We don't know if he did this. He could have been giving you a 12 and 12 or something to work the steps with. Well, he could have given you Hazleton guides with, you know, talk about your bestiality, you know, type of questions. You know what I mean? So Harvey Gerbil Feather is not of any interest to anybody in here. So don't come in here thinking that because you work the steps in another fellowship that means anything. That gives you zero status in here. Okay? Because this isn't AA, it's not NA. It's, you know, if you walked into AA or NA and said I did the steps with my food addict sponsor, you know, that's not going to cut it with those people. And it's the same thing in here. So, one of two things will happen. You'll come in here and you'll say, oh my God, what are these people talking about? And you'll recognize it as an overreaction to not so big of a problem in your life. You know, these guys are too hardcore. They're Nazis. And you'll leave. And you know what? That's fine. Or you may recognize or hear something in here because you are in real trouble. You have experience with that powerlessness. You know that you can't stay away from drugs or alcohol yourself. You need help doing that. And you'll recognize that there's some truth to some of the stuff that's being talked about in here. And you might stay. And you might even get somebody to take you through the work. And if you do that, your life will be immeasurably improved. It's not a big deal. It takes a couple of days. Right, Judy? I mean, how many hours does it take to get somebody from 1 to 12?
Maybe 6.
Yeah, it may take more than a couple of days. So it takes 6 hours and 3 days. Or it takes 2 months and 6 hours. Or it takes a year and 6 hours. You know what I'm saying? You can't spend 6 hours to save your own ass. Come on. I mean, you know, I'm telling you what, the toughest amends that they'll ask you to do in here is like kissing a baby's butt compared to putting alcohol or drugs back in your body. Think about that. Is it possible that if you don't do these 12 steps, you will drink and or drug again? You gotta be able to ask yourself that and consider it. I'm not answering the question for you. I'm asking you to consider that. And consider it in meditation. Consider it honestly. Is it possible if I don't get through the 12 steps, I will drink and I will drug again? Okay? So this process, it's been developed by Jimmy, by Ray, by a number of people. You don't sit here and you don't read every single word out of the book. They direct you to the passages that you need to be directed to be able to consider each step and to understand the mechanics of each step. The recovery process is an experience. It's learning of an experiential nature. What I mean by that is, I always give this example. There's two twin boys. They're about 12 years old. And both of them get really interested in mountain climbing. Now, one of them starts reading every book you can read on mountain climbing, goes to the Library of Congress. He's read every story on the summoning of Everest. He knows all the great people. I mean, he can teach mountaineering at a college. All right? Another kid gets involved with Outward Bound, starts going to climbing class, gets involved in the actual practice of climbing, and ends up at 18 years old being the youngest person to summit Mount Everest. Now, one person has read about it, the one person has done it. Who do you want to go to if you want the experience of Mount Everest described to you? You're going to want to go to the person that's actually climbed it, actually frozen their ass off, you know, actually, you know, braved the 50 below weather. You're going to want to go to those people. Now, the same thing with Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm sorry, with AA. I keep slipping. ANA.
Okay.
I speak too much in the other fellowship. Anyway, if you want advice on a recovery process, don't make the mistake of going to somebody who doesn't have it. There are rooms filled everywhere with people who will go to step meetings, people will talk about this, you hear them read in meetings, but they've never done them. So they've never had the experience of the 12 steps. So they can't lead you through that process. So be very painstaking in your choice of people to take you through the work. Don't be afraid to ask them, have you completed your amends? Do you pray and meditate on a daily basis? Are you working with other people? You know, do you do four steps? What does your 10-step look like? Get some information from these people before you ask to work with them. Because you can only pass on what you have. That's the good news. The bad news is you can only pass on what you have. So if you don't have anything, you're passing that on. If you've got a bad recovery process, you're passing that on. Now again, I speak from a basis of this book, Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm also speaking for the people who have recognized in their own life that they're powerless. It sounds so much sometimes when I talk at other meetings. I was accused by a big-time taper one time, saying, you know, Chris, I don't put any of your stuff on my website. And I go, why? And he goes, because you cause disunity in the fellowship. And I really had to think about that. You know, my message is causing a rift in unity in the fellowship. And I can see the guy's argument. You know, a lot of people don't want to hear what I have to share. They find it an overreaction. They think I'm a fanatic. There's a lot of judgment on a lot of people's part that they just want to be entertained. They just want somebody to tell their story. They don't want to be talked at. And I'm fine with that because I'm certainly not out there for everybody. But when you look at that argument, a rift in the unity, you have to understand that we've already split our unity. We're already overwhelmed with heavy drinkers in the fellowship. We're already overwhelmed with heavy drug users in another fellowship. Do we really need another fellowship where we're also overloaded with people who still have some power, who really don't need to do this stuff? That's really what ANA is about. Now, it's been a real blast watching this fellowship grow. It spread pretty far. A number of years ago, there was somebody who was really bothering me. They had heard some ANA talks, or they'd heard something about ANA, and these guys were from Iceland, and they started emailing me incessantly, saying, you know, we want to hear this ANA stuff. And really, what it is, it's a group of people who are influential in the downloading site XA Tapes. XA Tapes has done more for the message of recovery on this planet than anything else. It's a download site where each talk is previewed by three different members. They have people who are basically auditors for the recovery message on this site, and they won't put a tape on there where somebody tells a really funny story, you know, like midgets. I mean, but no message of recovery. You know, no message of recovery. You know what I'm saying? They won't put that on the site. If somebody's talking about the recovery, you are gonna, they're gonna say, okay, as long as the 12-step process is discussed in somebody's talk, they'll put that on the site. Now, XA Tapes has been become the biggest download site in the English-speaking world. They've probably had millions of hits. And there's people in every small town in the English-speaking world that listens to XA Tapes. And they've done a lot for it. Well, these guys heard about this hardcore message, and they were attracted to it because these are guys who are attracted to the recovery message. And they kept emailing me, and you know, finally I got Jimmy and Ray to go over to Iceland. And my favorite story about that is, it's like a 7-hour flight, you know, Ray can't stand flying, and they're coming down into Iceland, all there is like volcanoes and you know, rock formations, right? And Ray leans over to you, what does he say to you?
What am I doing here?
But they got there and they took some people through the work, you know, in between going to the clubs and everything. They took some people through the work. Now, I'm doing a convention in Copenhagen, Denmark, a couple of months ago in November. And I'm sitting there and I'm talking with some people. You know, it's in between sessions and I'm rapping by the literature table or something. And I mentioned, yeah, you know, we've also got this thing, you know, you like the message. We've also got this thing that, you know, has basically really attracted a lot of drug addicts and alcoholics. It's called ANA. And I start to talk about it, and all of a sudden from about that far away, I hear a girl chirp up, "I'm in ANA." I go, so I go over there and I talk to her and I say, "You're in ANA?" She goes, "Yeah." And I start going, well, no, ANA is not about meetings. It's a way of taking people through the steps. It had spread from Iceland through Scandinavia, and people are using the ANA method to go through the steps and then staying in whatever fellowship they're in. Now, that may be the future of this thing. Who the hell knows? But it was just interesting. There's room for this hardcore recovery message. There's room for it. There are people that really need it. My personal opinion is in the 70s and 80s, some of the fellowships were so watered down, the real alcoholics or the real addicts almost always died. There wasn't enough in those fellowships to give to you so you could stay. There wasn't enough for you to participate in that would hold you there. And some people just forced themselves to go to meeting after meeting after meeting, trudging the dark, dirty road of sobriety, you know, and just miserable, like, "I'm not drinking today! And I killed my dog! And I punched out my wife, but I'm a winner! I didn't drink!" You know, and some people could survive that way, you know? But the people who had lost all choice in drink did not get the power of choice by sitting in discussion meetings in group talking about what happened to me today with my in-laws. If you were here last week, you know, I brought you up to speed about my in-laws. And my in-laws are back, and I just want to cover it off with everybody. All the new drama that's going on with the in-laws in my house. And thank you for letting me share.
Oh, my God.
Tell somebody who cares. You know what I mean? I don't care about your in-laws. What are you doing here? You belong on a bad Bob Newhart episode. You know what I mean? Good God. Who told you we were $1 therapy? I need to have a talk with them right away. You know what I mean? And, you know, the 70s and 80s, we were being inundated with that in the fellowships, you know. It's time for me to update you on my drama du jour. And, oh, you think your drama du jour is bad? Let me tell you about my drama du jour. My drama du jour is worse than your drama du jour. You know, and so here we are, you know, the real alcoholic or the real addict, you know, just trying, you know, finally, you know what we say? screw this, and we go and we drink and we use. You know, because we've gone from unmanageability back into insanity, and we start drinking or using again. So the fellowships became filled up with heavy drinkers and heavy drug users, okay? They just did. There's got to be a place where we, who are truly powerless over alcohol or drugs, can find some kind of solace. And you know what? Everybody that's in ANA is absolutely welcomed and even encouraged to go to whatever fellowship you choose on the outside of this. Please. You know, carry whatever message you can carry, wherever you can carry it. Hang with the people that need you. Support the groups that need you. You know, I'm in AA much more than I'm in ANA. But I'll tell you what. Hold on to this mecca, this recovery gem. Hold on to this group. Be one of the people who sticks around year after year to make sure that this place still happens, because there are people who need it. You know, there are people who need it. Has anybody in here ever relapsed? Raise your hand. Okay. Did anybody ever go up to you and say, well, you must have really not wanted it?
Oh, yeah.
How about, did they ever go up and say, you must have just not been being honest with yourself? You should try harder. And have you, now consider for a fact, didn't you really not want to drink and drug? You know, somehow, okay, you changed your mind, but I mean, didn't you really not want to drink and drug? Why in the hell do you want to go back into a fellowship, raise your hand, and say, I'm a loser. I got one day, I'm a loser. Who wants to do that? You know, and everybody, yay, it's got a day. You sorry bastard. You know, I thought I felt bad today, but yeah, all right. You know, who wants to do that? Nobody. So when we don't relapse because we're not being honest, or we don't really want it, or 51% of us wanted to drink more than the 49% that wanted to stay sober. Whatever crap they tell you, because they're heavy drinkers or heavy drug users, and they don't understand the concept of powerlessness. That their meeting is a human power. You know, and that human power is insufficient to combat alcoholism or drug addiction. And going to that meeting does not make you a recovered member. You know, if you sit in a chicken coop, are you going to become a chicken? If you go to a PTA meeting, is it going to make you a parent? Well, if you go to a 12-step meeting, is it going to get you through the 12 steps? No! The work, the recovery work, isn't done in this meeting. It's done when you get out there. It's done over at Jimmy's house. It's done at Sandy's house. It's done wherever it gets done. It's done when you're knocking on the door. Oh, I'm here to make amends. That's where the recovery work is done. You know what I'm saying? And that's when, you know, how do you know? The willingness needs to come from your understanding, your full concession that you're alcoholic and you can't manage your own life. You're a drug addict, you can't manage your own life. And you're powerless over drugs or you're powerless over alcohol. If you can get there, there's no other way to go than this. There just isn't. There's no other way to go. Come to ANA. Go through the work here if you haven't already. Get to the other side of amends. The difference in your conscious state from having unfinished amends and having finished your amends is the difference between night and day in your quality of life and your peace and serenity and the state of consciousness that you have. Here's an unrecovered alcoholic or addict. Restless, irritable, discontent, shame, guilt, remorse from the things you did in the past, self-centered fear and anxiety about what's going to happen in the future, terror, bewilderment, frustration, despair, depression, anxiety. Anybody relate to any of those things? That's untreated alcoholism. That's untreated drug addiction. Okay, you don't have to suffer from those things. Get to the other side of amends and then talk to me about that crap. Talk to me about that crap after you get to the other side of amends. All right, and you'll have a whole different perspective. Trust me. And this is the thing you have to take on faith, because you're never going to understand the spiritual process until you have your own experience. You'll be the boy reading the books on mountaineering, thinking you've climbed Mount Everest. Thinking you know. Okay, you don't know. You have to actually climb the mountain to get to the other side and know. So again, very few people who get through the other side of amends ever argue with me about this. But every once in a while, somebody will take me to task, you know, before the meeting, or after the meeting, I'll say something like, "Well, is it your experience that you've done all the amends you're consciously aware of?" "Well, no." "Well, then I can't talk to you because you're going to be giving me an opinion based on an experience you've never had. I'm not interested in you giving me your opinion. I've got an experience. You know, experience trumps opinion." Right?
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, I think I've rambled on long enough. I'm going to turn the meeting back over to Jimmy. And again, if anybody has any problems with what I've shared here tonight, Jimmy asked me to speak here. Okay? He knows what I say. Don't be coming up to me afterward giving me any crap. All right? He asked me. That's all I got.
Good. Thanks, Chris. It's a good time to come after me now because I'm a lot smaller and in a weakened state after surgery. Well, I'll tell you, Chris really hits it on the head. I was just talking to Chris before the meeting, just catching up on some things, and I'm grateful that he's been my sponsor and such a good friend. And because I have some time off and he's got some time off, we're going to advance some work on me and do some Hawks exercises. Again, after you go through the work this way in A&A and you get through it quick and you have an experience, why not have another experience doing some more in-depth stuff? You're already saved, you know, and we got to grow, you know, and we have to enlarge our spiritual life. We're what? Doomed? Isn't that what it said? Doomed.
That's bad.
Yeah, I think that. Yeah, I'd say it's bad. You know, because a guy like me is screwed. I showed up at Ray's house to go through the work with three guns on. You know, guns?
Because you never know.
You never know. Ray's this friggin' big, you know? Yeah, he was a banker. He might come after me. I didn't know what the hell was going on. I used to go to Chris's meeting up in Burnsville with my 6'3" girlfriend, the big unit, strapped. I had my guns on to be sitting there. People would be trying to hug me. I'd go, "Get away. I don't want to frisk you." Yeah, I'd explode. Yeah, another guy we know in California did the same thing I did. He goes, "I'd explode if I got a hug." You know, I'd get away. I had hair triggers. F you. You know? But I got this message in a small pocket of enthusiasm. And Chris said to me, he goes, "I know a guy that can help you." Bam, he puts me together with another hopeless addict like me. My experience has been to take as many people through the work as I possibly can, work as people as often as I can, get them to where they're safe and protected, and let them help others. And the neatest thing is that I did that. A lot of people got resentments with me. If you go around the tri-state area and you go to some of these meetings, you're going to find out that people friggin' hate me. And that was your experience. And it's wild. You know, I took you through the work because God allowed me a minute with you. And thank God, because I'm safe and protected and so are you. Catch a resentment with me and go open up a meeting in another fellowship and start helping other people. Didn't hurt me. Didn't hurt anybody. But you go around, you find you do this stuff, and if you really stick to the work, and you know, you stay on some people. It tells us in the book, I forget what it says, but if we're diligent or whatever, remarkable things happen.
Painstaking.
Yeah, painstaking or something else. One of the words. One of those brutal friggin' words.
Painstaking.
If you really bust your ass and do this work, amazing things happen for you and the new man. You know? If I stay on you a little bit and push you, put a boot in your ass a little bit, something's going to happen for you and me. Because I know you want to do it, and I see people do it all the time, and it's amazing. I'm a lot softer than I used to be. I've softened up quite a bit.
You don't shoot at people anymore.
Yeah, I'm not shooting at people. Ray always says, you know, he take people through the work so they get safe and protected. And I took Jimmy through the work so other people were safe and protected. You know? But it's just a joy, you know? And it's nice when, you know, Shredder tells people your fifth step about midgets and stuff. And
you share that all the time.
I share it all the time. I'm busting your chops. But, you know, real quick, does anybody have a question about this? About A&A, about any part of the process?
The Shredder's not here that often. If you got a question about it, he's one of the trustees, and he's one of the guys to ask, because he makes the friggin' rules. All right, don't ask me after. Now, dude, if you want to go through the work, if you haven't been through the work, please come up. There's men and women that are here more than happy to take you through the work. And we got cake in the back. Love to see everybody here next week.
And a full description of the recovery process through A&A is on these DVDs. This is Ray Kapp at his absolute best. An A&A retreat from back in the day when he was on the top of his game. There's probably 10 hours worth of material on here. It'll play on your computer. Highly recommended. I listened to it not long ago. I love every minute of it. Jimmy talks about his immense stories where he has to ask somebody the three questions who he shot.
Well, let me tell you something. You go to a... I wasn't that good a guy all the time. You go to a meeting like this, right? And you hear something about making amends. I got to make amends. That's what's wrong with me. And they tell you the three questions. So I start making appointments with people to make my effing amends. I'm like Earl. It's all about me. You know, it's not what God wants me to do. So I set up an appointment with a guy to make amends. I scare the crap out of the guy. Like, I used to collect money from him. Why are you calling me? It's on here. Now, I need to meet you same place tomorrow night, 7 o'clock, click. Would that scare the crap out of you? You know, like, you know, I might have been a little off the wall at times, but that story's on here. It's pretty effing funny. And it tells you how not to make amends. Like, you can get all this information and use it wrong. And what Shredder said, I call him Shredder all the time, what Chris said earlier about having the knowledge and not the experience, it's dangerous. It is absolutely dangerous. It's the worst thing to do, read this book and go tell somebody how to do the work. You're going to kill them. And if you do that to me, I may kill your family, your friend's family. You know, I'm a guy like me might just go absolutely nuts. And if you take Sabrina through to work that way, a lot of people are going to die. You know? She's like me. You know? Hey, let's get sober, become an outlaw. Okay. You know, like, things don't make sense. You know, have an experience with this process and share it with people in a loving way. You know, I love it. My basic summation of going through the work is this. Taking somebody through the work is this. God, Chris, God, have fun. Because that's what it is. Just trying to introduce you to God so you can have your experience, your understanding of God, and your relationship with God. Cap took me through the work, and it wasn't work. It was just instrumental in getting my relationship with God. You know, when I go to Chris with so Chris is the one, like, when Ray can't talk me out of something when I'm dark, he goes, call Jimmy. He's flipping the F out.
He's up on the tower.
Yeah, that's what we call it. Chris, Jimmy's on the tower. Call him. All right, Jim, I want you to come down out of the tower. Here's why. You know? And Chris is a way of talking to me. That's why he's my sponsor. And my sponsor is a spiritual advisor, somebody who's going to constantly guide me to God. If you're, you know, what was that guy, Mr. Gerbil Feather, you know? And if he's just going to tell you to go stay in and hang out with your Aunt Fanny and Uncle Fudd, you know, and calm down for a little, have some of Aunt Fanny's cake and call me, tell me how you feel later, you're screwed. If the guy that you call is a spiritual advisor, like I call Bob there, old Berg and Bob, and I said, Bob, this guy's really pissing me off. Chris is really pissing me off. Exactly. I'm going to ask you some questions.
Throw a pencil at them, yeah.
Yeah, throw a pencil, you know. Where are you at in prayer and meditation? Steps, meaning, service. And let's pray. Let's do a resentment prayer and find out what your part is real fast. Let's get you to God. Let's get you plugged in. Because getting plugged in is the most important thing.
It says in the book, our reliance must be on a higher power, a power greater than ourselves. It can't be on human power. So you won't find the hierarchical type of things with sponsors or spiritual advisors in A&A. Get them through the work, and now we're peers. You know, it doesn't mean that we can't talk to each other and help each other with problems, but we're on a peer basis. We're not like, yeah, that's my pigeon, or that's my baby, or whatever the...
Yeah, I hate that baby's and pigeon's crap. Yeah. Screw you.
He's my friend, you know, yeah. He's my friend. There's in the book, here's how it is in the book. You have a prospect. That's somebody who may need to go through the 12 steps. He's hurting. Then you have a protege. That's when they've become talked into actually going through the steps. So while you're taking somebody through the steps, you have a protege. And when they get to step 12, you now have a friend. That's what it talks about in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's kind of what happens here.
Yeah, right? I kind of like you.
Yeah, well, yeah. You don't always have to like everybody.
Yeah, but it's just cool. If you haven't had this experience, if you haven't gone through the work, give it a shot. What do you have to lose?
And you'll never hear us say, just put the plug in the jug, because we know you don't have a plug.
Yeah.
We're plugless.
If you shot up antifreeze, you may have a slight problem. All right? But really, anyone wants to go through the work after, come on up. We'll help you out. If you have any questions for Chris or you need to smack them, come on up. And there's cake in the back, and we got a nice way of closing.
So you're on your A game today?
You think?
Hey, Pete, you want to take us out?
Sure. Can we have a moment of silence for the still sick and suffering alcoholic, followed by the Lord's Prayer? Our Father,
who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil.